can play mridanga. Mridanga. You don't know how to.
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा, जय गिरिवर धारी, जय गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा, जय गिरिवर धारी, जय गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की, श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। निताई गौर प्रेम मंदिर। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। थैंक यू। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 18। चैप्टर 18 इज एंटाइटल्ड दीति वाउस टू किल किंग इंद्र, एंड टुडे वी आर ऑन टेक्स्ट 37। दितिरुवाच वरदो यदि मे ब्रह्मन्, वरदो यदि मे ब्रह्मन् पुत्रम् इन्द्रहनं वृणे, पुत्रम् इन्द्रहनं वृणे Amrityumritaputraham. Amrityumritaputraham. Yena meghatito suto. Yena meghatito suto. Ditiruvacha. Varado yadi me brahman. Putram indrahanam vrane. Amrityum ritu putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Ditiruvacha. Varado yadi me brahman. Putram indrahinhanam vrane. Amrityum rita putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Amrityumrita putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Vaishnavis. Ditiruvacha. Varado yadi me brahman. Putram indrahanam vrane. Amrityum rita putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Ditiruvacha. Varado yadi me brahman. Putram indrahanam vrane. Amrityum rita putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Ditiruvacha. Varado yadi me brahman. Putram indrahanam vrane. Amrityum rita putraham. Yena meghatito suto. Diti ruvacha. Diti said. Varadaha. The giver of benedictions. Yadi. If. Me. To me. Brahman. O great soul. Putram, a son, Indrahanam, who can kill Indra, Vrine, I'm asking for, Amrityum, immortal, Mritaputra, whose sons are dead, Aham, I, Yena, by whom, Me, my, Ghatito, were caused to be killed, Suto, two sons. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation. Diti replied, O my husband, O great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Purport. The word Indrahanam means one who can kill Indra, but it also means one who follows Indra. The word Amrityum refers to the demigods, who do not die like ordinary human beings because they have extremely long durations of life. For example, the duration of Lord Brahma's life is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahar Yad Brahmano Vidu. Even the duration of one day or 12 hours of Brahma is 4,300,000 years multiplied by 1,000. Thus, the duration of his life is inconceivable for an ordinary human being. The demigods are therefore sometimes called Amar, which means one who has no death. In this material world, however, everyone has to die. Therefore, the words Amrityum indicates that Diti wanted a son who would be equal in status to the demigods. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Diratarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayvacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are continuing to read about Diti and Kashyapa Muni. Over the last few verses, we have been seeing some of the speakers describing what are the duties of a chaste wife and what are the duties of a husband in this material world when they enter into the grahastha ashram. And we heard many elaborations on this point as to how a husband should serve his wife and how a wife should faithfully serve her husband and please her and fulfill all his please him and fulfill all his desires. And therefore we see actually the Canto 6 is actually called as Prescribed Duties of Mankind. That is the title of the canto itself. Now, there are 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they have been elaborately described in the second canto, 10th chapter, verse 1. The verse says, Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam uttaya manvantara ishu isha anukatha nirodho muktir ashraya. So these are the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they start with sarga. Sarga means the universal creation or the primary creation which is done by the Lord. Visarga. Visarga means the secondary creation which is then done by Lord Brahma based on the blueprint which Lord Vishnu gives him. Sthanam means positioning of various living entities in various planetary systems. And then we have Poshanam, which means the Lord's protection for his devotees. Uttaya, which means the inclination to act. Utti, it's also called as Utti. That means how a person gets the impetus to act in this material world. And then we have Manvantara. Manvantara means the reign of the Manus. A whole description of how the Manus reigned, who came from them, who ruled, which were the different kings which came, and what are the things they established in this world. Isha Anukatha. Isha Anukatha means topics or pastimes of the Lord, his devotees and his incarnations. Nirodho. Nirodho means annihilation. And Muktir Ashraya. Muktir means liberation and Ashraya means the supreme shelter. So they do not follow a chronological order, of course, because Ashraya or the supreme shelter is actually the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they don't follow a chronological order, but these are broadly the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, all the cantos represent also various limbs of the Lord. The first and the second canto represent the lotus feet of the Lord. The third and the fourth canto represent the thighs of the Lord. The fifth canto is his navel. The sixth canto is his chest, which is what we are currently on in the sixth canto. The seventh and eighth cantos are the arms of the Lord. The ninth canto is the throat. The tenth canto is the beautiful smiling face of Lord Shri Krishna, and that is where we see all Krishna's pastimes being elaborately described, whether in Gokul or in Vrindavan or in Dwarka, Mathura, all these pastimes are elaborately described. The 11th canto is the forehead of the Lord, and the 12th canto is the head of the Lord. So these are the divisions of the 12 cantos and the 10 subject matters which are covered within these 12 cantos of the Lord. Now the 6th canto is the chest of the Lord, as we saw, and it also describes, out of the 10 subject matters, it describes what is called as Poshanam. Poshanam is for the protection offered by the Lord to his devotees. And we see this throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. It starts throughout this canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the 6th canto, as we see, starts with the pastime of, anybody remembers? Whose pastime, 6th canto? Very nice. It starts with the canto of Ajamil, where we see the holy name of the Lord giving protection to Ajamil at the most crucial time of his life, which was at the time of death. It saved him from the Yamadutas. It saved him from going to hellish condition of life. So we see how the canto starts with the protection of the Lord, and it starts with how the holy name is non-different from the Lord and how it protected Ajamila from the abominable, going down to the abominable condition of life. Then the canto flows through even the Lord protecting Vritrasura. So he sees how Chitraketu is, Mara Chitraketu is protected. So the Lord sometimes comes in the form of his holy names to protect. Sometimes he sends his representatives or devotees to protect. And in terms of Chitraketu, we saw that he sent Angira Muni and Narad Muni to protect Chitraketu from that fall down after the lamentation of losing his son. So we see how the Lord protected him, and even when Chitraketu got cursed, he rose to a very high position of a Gandharva, but unfortunately he got cursed by Mother Parvati because of a misunderstanding. And even at that time the Lord protects. So he had to have that curse on him. He became a demon, the great demon Vritrasura, but even in that demoniac body the Lord protected. And we have to understand what does this protection of the Lord mean, because this whole canto represents Poshanam, or the protection of the Lord. So Prabhupada explains, when Krishna says that I protect, na me bhakta pranashyati, in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna proclaims that, O Arjuna, boldly declare that my devotee never perishes. So at that time Prabhupada explains that it is not that Krishna is making a vow or a promise to protect the physical body of the devotee. When he says protect, because ultimately we saw Vritrasura actually got killed by Indra. And if in layman's terms, it was a very slow, painful death. Because it's described when we read that pastime earlier in this canto, we saw how Indra's, weapon took almost 1 year to cut Vritrasura's throat. Vritrasura's throat was so powerful, so strong, that it took 1 year. Now imagine for 1 year, one cutting is going on. Obviously, he's gone through a painful death. But what does the Lord mean by that he will protect his devotees? It means that he will protect their Krishna consciousness. He does not allow them to fall down. He does not allow them, even in whatever bodily condition of life they might be, he remembers the devotional service they have done, and he also reminds them to remember him at the time of death. And therefore we hear about the exalted consciousness of Vritrasura when he is leaving his body. How he was actually goading Indra that please kill me quickly, because Indra had become a bit despondent when he was losing the battle against Vritrasura. But it was Vritrasura who goaded Indra. Kill me quickly so that I can achieve the worshipable lotus feet of my Supreme Lord. So we see Krishna protected Vritrasura, not the physical body. Obviously he died, but he protected his consciousness completely, and he took him back to his lotus feet. So that is the Poshanam that we are talking about. And now we are coming towards the end of Canto 6 slowly, and where we will see the transformation of Diti and Indra through devotional service or through bhakti. That is what we are going to see in the remainder of the 6th canto. Now, coming to today's verse, now this canto, like I said, is also called as prescribed duties of mankind. So in this section, we are actually seeing in the current section that it is describing the prescribed duties of the grahastha ashram, of a husband and wife. And what should a husband do in his dealings with his wife, and how should a wife deal with the husband? And particularly from Diti's point of view, when we see this section, it is talking more about how a wife should deal with the husband. And we read many beautiful verses and we heard many beautiful narrations from the previous speakers on what are some of the qualities and attributes a chaste wife should have when she is serving her husband and how she should keep her grihastha ashram intact and safe and protected. It is said also in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the grihastha ashram is like a fort and the woman is like the protector of that fort. She actually, you know, does not allow her husband to fall backwards. So the duty of the husband is to take the woman forward in spiritual life. And therefore it is said a chaste woman should follow in the footsteps of her advanced husband. But at the same time, the duty of a woman is to ensure the husband does not fall back in his spiritual life because of gross material sense gratification or lusty relationship within the marriage. So that is what we are seeing over here. What are the duties of a husband and wife towards each other? And now when we are seeing today, in today's verse, Diti has started speaking. In the previous verses, Diti was just serving Kashyapa Muni and Kashyapa Muni was very pleased with that service. And in the yesterday we heard in the class how Kashyapa Muni promises Diti because of her good service. He says that, oh, beautiful and chaste lady, you can ask me for any benediction that you want. I'm happy to fulfill it because you have served me so chastely and nicely. And now Diti has started speaking. And now when Diti has started speaking, we are also seeing another aspect in terms of prescribed duties, in terms of actually what a husband and wife should not do in their married life. Because we are seeing a revelation of Diti's mind in this particular verse, and therefore we get a glimpse of what should not be done by a woman towards her husband. And in the next few verses, we will also see what should not be done by a husband towards the woman, towards his wife. So we can clearly see over here that Diti is being very manipulative and diplomatic. See, the whole purpose of why she actually served her husband so nicely. In the previous verses, we saw glorification of the duties of a chaste wife. We saw that aspect being glorified. How she was very nicely serving the husband, fulfilling all his desires, so, you know, making everything ready for her because he's a muni. So making everything ready for his worship, participating in whatever he was doing. So we saw how with sweet words she was serving him, you know, preparing nice foodstuffs, keeping the house really nice. So she served him very nicely, but ultimately that all service was to achieve a personal goal, or there was a hidden motive or agenda which Diti had. And therefore, we see that, you know, it was not true service, but it was all artificial behavior by Diti. And we got a glimpse into Diti's mind earlier in this chapter. In verses 24, 25, 26, we see how Diti is thinking, because the verse before that describes how it's describing Aditi's sons, Diti's sons and all that, and it describes how with the help of, like on the instigation of Indra, Lord Vishnu came and killed her two sons, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Now obviously she is a mother, even though her sons were great demons, they were creating havoc in the world, she's ignoring that particular aspect, saying that good, actually the world got rid of, you know, these two burdensome demoniac sons that I had produced, and now the world can be a peaceful place. But obviously she's a mother, she's materially attached to her sons, and therefore she is very aggrieved when she loses her sons. And that time she is actually saying, that I vow to kill Indra, and the title of the chapter itself is Diti vows to kill King Indra. Only then my mind will be peaceful and pacified. So till I actually have a son who becomes the killer of Indra, this mind will not be pacified. And over there she is, you know, giving a big sermon. In her mind she is thinking that the body is even great, body of great people like Indra has to go to worm. It ultimately goes into ashes. Why does Indra think that he is immortal? Not thinking that even her sons were not immortal and it's okay if they died. But applying philosophy to others. So that's what Diti was doing when she was thinking how she now wants to avenge the death of her sons. And therefore, she wanted to have a son who would actually help her fulfill that particular vow that Indra should get killed. In fact, she says, in verse 26, she says, let me adopt some means which will help me achieve this goal. So very calculated person, very manipulative and calculatedly, she has actually then started, and the next verse is how she started serving her husband very nicely. So it was all to adopt some means by which ultimately to realize whatever she wanted to get as the outcome of this. So we see that Prabhupada says that this all behavior of Diti was completely artificial. It wasn't true. There are many, you know, elaborately, if we see Narad Muni has described very elaborately what should a chaste woman do and how she should serve her husband in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In his conversation with Yudhishthir Maharaj, Narad Muni gives very nice description of the duties of every ashrama, every varna, and based on, further going deeper into that, he gives the duties of Grahastha Ashram. And over there he says some of the qualities of a chaste wife which Narad Muni describes in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that a chaste woman should not be greedy at all. And what are we seeing over here, Diti doing? The completely opposite. She's very greedy to achieve her own personal goal. To achieve something which is actually not good for mankind. Because whatever it is, Indra does have anarthas. We see his example being used throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, where, obviously the greatest example we see is the Govardhan Leela pastime, where he actually misunderstands Lord Krishna to be an ordinary boy, and even when he steals the sacrificial horse in Maharaj Prithu's pastime. So we see all that, but we have to remember that Indra is the king of the demigods. He's head of all the demigods, and he's favored by Vishnu. All the demigods are very dear to Lord Vishnu. They might be Kama Mishra Bhaktis, they might be mixed devotees, but still they are dear and they are trusted by the Lord. That is why the Lord has given them in charge of the universal affairs. And here Diti is wanting to kill Indra himself, who is the head of the demigods, just because he told the Lord to kill the two sons. So, but we see Narad Muni says that a chaste wife should not be greedy, and she should always be very truthful in her behavior. Twice Narad Muni stresses that in that canto. Very truthfully she should behave with her husband. And what do we see over here? Diti doing? Completely untruthful behavior. Her behavior was based on deceit or lies. So she has been completely untruthful to her husband. She has that greed inside her mind that she wants to achieve a son who will kill Indra, and with that purpose she has worshipped her husband. And it is also said, Narad Muni further describes the wife's duties towards her husband. He says that she should consider her husband's vows as her own, and she should serve her husband following in his footsteps. Now obviously it is not Kashyapa Muni's vow to kill Indra. In fact, in the next verse we will see, tomorrow day after, we will see Kashyapa Muni starts lamenting. He said, you are a woman, and obviously you might not have thought with your head. You are just thinking with your heart out of your material attachment to your sons. But I am a muni. I am a sage. I am supposed to be wise. But what have I done? I have fallen down to your, nice covered glances and your nice behavior. I fell down to that. I fell into that trap, and I have promised you that I will give you a benediction. And alas, what a benediction you have asked. This is not good for Indra, and this is not good for mankind. And Indra should not be killed, because those two, your demoniac sons, were creating havoc. That is why they had to be killed. But Indra should not be killed for that offense at least. So we see how Kashyapa Muni will start lamenting. So it was not his vow, but it is Diti's vow. But Narad Muni says that the chaste wife should always be following the husband's vows and assisting him in fulfilling his particular vows. So when we read all these descriptions of Narad Muni on the behavior of a chaste wife, we see Diti doing actually completely the opposite. So even though externally she showed nice behavior, sweet words, serving very nicely, preparing everything for her husband very beautifully, cooking nice food for him, but internally it was all a deceit, it was all a lie. So we can see that she did all these things with Kashyapa Muni, with that hidden motive that she had, that Indra should get killed. And this is called as, this particular behavior which Diti has displayed or shown over here is called as kutinati, or diplomacy or duplicitous behavior. Obviously, you're duplicitous behavior because you are having something else in mind and you're doing something else with your actions. And Prabhupada warns against this behavior in many, many, many of his purports in the Bhagavatam, and especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. ಹೀ ಸೇಸ್ ಇನ್ ಮಧ್ಯ ಲೀಲಾ, ಇನ್ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಚರಿತ್ರ ಮತ್ತೆ ಮಧ್ಯ ಲೀಲಾ ವರ್ಸ್ 159, ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 19 ವರ್ಸ್ 159, ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಸೇಸ್, ಹೀ ಸೇಸ್ ನಿಷೀಧಾಚರ ಕುಟಿನಾಟಿ ಜೀವ ಹಿಂಸಾನ ಲಾಭ ಪೂಜಾ ಪ್ರತಿಷ್ಠಾದಿ ಯಥಾ ಉಪಶಾಖಾ ಗಣ. ಸೊ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಸೇಸ್ ದಟ್ ದೀಸ್ ಕುಟಿನಾಟಿ ನಿಷೀಧಾಚರ ಜೀವ ಹಿಂಸಾ, ಕುಟಿನಾಟಿ ಇಸ್ ಡಿಪ್ಲೊಮಸಿ ಆರ್ ಡಿಪ್ಲೀಷಿಯಸ್ ಬಿಹೇವಿಯರ್, ಜೀವ ಹಿಂಸಾ ಇಸ್ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ವೈಲೆಂಟ್ ಟು ಅದರ್ ಲಿವಿಂಗ್ ಎಂಟಿಟೀಸ್, ಲಾಭ ಪೂಜಾ ಪ್ರತಿಷ್ಠಾ ಲುಕಿಂಗ್ ಫಾರ್ ಗೇನ್ ಫಾರ್ ಯೋರ್ ಸೆಲ್ಫ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಫಾರ್ ಯು ನೋ ಫೇಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಪ್ರೆಸ್ಟೀಜ್, ಪ್ರತಿಷ್ಠಾ ಇಸ್ ಫೇಮ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಪ್ರೆಸ್ಟೀಜ್, ಲುಕಿಂಗ್ ಫಾರ್ ಆಲ್ ದೀಸ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್, ದೀಸ್ ಆರ್ ಉಪಶಖ ಗಣ. ಸೊ ದೀಸ್ ಆರ್ ಅನ್ವಾಂಟೆಡ್ ಕ್ರೀಪರ್ಸ್ ವಿಚ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಗ್ರೋ ಅಲಾಂಗ್ ವಿತ್ ದ ಕ್ರೀಪರ್ ಆಫ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ. And Srila Prabhupada warns devotees that we should be very careful. Sometimes you cannot differentiate along with the creeper of bhakti. These creepers of anarthas might be growing and we might not be able to differentiate between the creeper of bhakti or what is actually devotional service and what are actually anarthas which we are allowing to sprout in our heart. And Prabhupada warns that one should be very careful. In fact, in that purport he elaborates on kutinati, or diplomatic or duplicitous behavior, which is what we are focusing on because we see Diti displaying that behavior with her husband. He says that it can never satisfy the Atma or the soul. In fact, it can never satisfy the body and the mind also. Ultimately, Diti was not satisfied with her behavior, with the request that she made of Kashyapa Muni. She wasn't satisfied at all. So Prabhupada says it will never satisfy one's soul if one tries to adopt these duplicitous means to gain their hidden motives or agenda. In fact, Prabhupada says that Vaishnava should have very open, honest and straightforward dealings which are authorized by Vedic authorities. That is how we Vaishnava should deal with each other. They should be very open and transparent. They should be honest in what they are actually seeking from another Vaishnava. So let's say sometimes we might have a requirement, we might want to gain something from another Vaishnava, we might want to request for something. It is better to be honest about it and straightforward about it, Prabhupada explains in that purport, rather than dupliciously trying to achieve that particular goal. So Prabhupada says that the advancement in spiritual life, a devotee's advancement in spiritual life is obstructed if a devotee allows this creeper, this anartha of duplicitous behavior or diplomacy to grow in their heart. It can actually put an obstruction to one's spiritual life. Now, even in Chaitanya Sikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda, which has been written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains how various anarthas are represented by various demons in Krishna Leela. So there is a elaborate, when we studied the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam with Keshav Prabhu, there is a big, you know, there is elaboration. We studied about the various demons who come to Vrindavan, who are sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. And we studied, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given elaboration on each demon and how every demon represented an anartha in our spiritual life, which as devotees we should try and avoid and uproot those anarthas, the creepers of anarthas which are growing in our heart. And Bakasura, the demon Bakasura who came to kill Krishna, after Vatsasura was killed by Krishna, the demon Bakasura comes, which was in the form of a stork or a duck demon. And that particular demon actually represents the anartha of duplicity, deceptiveness and false behavior. And that is exactly what we are seeing Diti displaying over here. She is displaying duplicity, she is displaying diplomacy in her behavior to achieve something and also false behavior. Whatever nicely she served her husband was absolutely false. It was artificial, Prabhupada says. So as devotees, we have to be extremely careful that we do not heed to this behavior in our relationships, in our dealings with Vaishnavas. We do not bring this dupliciousness. Now in material world, you know, we acknowledge sometimes we have to show diplomacy, we have to like be very careful when we are dealing in our offices or with outside people we are dealing in the material world. That time we have to show some diplomacy in our dealings. However, we should not allow that to come into devotional relationships. Because ultimately, you know, dadati prati granati guhya makhyati prachati. The dealings between devotees are very nicely described in the Nectar of Instruction. So a devotee should reveal one's mind and confidence to another devotee, and he should also hear whatever another devotee reveals to him and keep it confidential within himself. And they should exchange gifts, there should be loving exchange, there should be discussion of the Lord's pastimes. So we see in dealings of devotees, if we allow this dupliciousness to come in, it is going to obviously destroy relationships, because devotees will lose trust in each other. Like they might, you know, be trusting and they might think, oh, this devotee is genuinely being nice to me and genuinely developing a good relationship with me. But ultimately then when they come to know the devotee had a hidden motive and they wanted to achieve something from that devotee, it will break the devotee's trust. So like as, you know, exemplary devotees in the congregation, we need to imbibe this particular quality where we are not breaking devotees' trust by showing this dupliciousness or kutinati behavior. And if especially, you know, this dupliciousness has been done to achieve a personal goal. Now Srila Prabhupada at the same time also elaborates. He mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela in the 12th chapter, 44th verse, Prabhupada says that diplomacy used for the service of the Lord is a form of devotional service. So whenever we are, you know, we are not saying we should not be, when we say, oh, we should be straightforward, if some devotee has cooked nice, you know, some bhoga they have, prasadam they have cooked and they are serving, and we are very straightforward and we say, oh my God, what, you know, taste, the dal is very spicy, or what you have cooked, you don't know how to cook. Or, you know, the chapatis are very dry, or this is not good, that is not good. So when we talk about straightforwardness, obviously we don't want to be rude or brutal with a devotee in giving feedback or in, you know, revealing our mind. Obviously over there we have to show some diplomacy because it is conducive to devotional service. So we have to, as devotees, understand this difference. So we have, you know, diplomacy is required sometimes if it is conducive to devotional service. Like Prabhupada says, diplomacy used for the service of the Lord is a form of devotional service itself. So when obviously we are dealing with devotees, we can't be straightforward. If some devotee has learning to do some service and we are very upfront in our feedback that, oh, you have not done properly, then obviously are we motivating that devotee or are we demoralizing that devotee from further trying to serve the Lord? And that is where we have to put the hat on, that I have to be diplomatic with this devotee, encourage them, and at the same time, so that they don't lose their motivation to serve the Supreme Lord and lose their motivation to do any service, that they are still in the phase of learning. So that is what Prabhupada describes, that diplomacy used which is conducive for devotional service is actually used by devotees. But diplomacy which is used, kutinati, which is called, it's used by devotees to achieve their own personal hidden agenda and personal goals or some motive they have, which is they are not, some malintention they have, which they are not revealing upfront to the other devotee, that is absolutely not conducive. It will actually thwart the creeper of the devotional bhakti. It will thwart that creeper from growing completely, all this anartha of kutinati. And Prabhupada elaborates in this particular purport, in the 12th chapter, 44th verse, that is, it is a conversation between actually Ramanand Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada elaborates in that purport that some devotees, great devotees of the Lord, like Ramanand Rai, like Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, were very expert. They were all officers in the government. And, you know, being in politics, people have to be very diplomatic. There is actually, you know, there are positions within the government called as diplomatic relationships. And somebody, there's a portfolio with somebody heads where you have to develop diplomatic relationships with other countries. So Prabhupada says that all these people were great, big government officers, and they knew the art of diplomacy in how to deal with others so that the relationship is conducive and devotional service can be further progressed. And Prabhupada gives various examples. So this, like I said, this particular verse is from Ramanand Rai's conversation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Ramanand Rai was also a governor of Madras, of Chennai. And he was actually wanting to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Maharaj Pratap Rudra favors Ramanand Rai because he was a great devotee. He tells Ramanand Rai that you can continue serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you don't need to be the governor anymore, but I will still continue paying you. And obviously a governor was drawing huge amount of money, his salary was quite good, but Maharaj Pratap Rudra said, I will keep paying you. And that is what now Ramanand Rai is using. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being a sannyasi, very strict sannyasi, wanting to set an example, did not want to associate with Maharaj Pratap Rudra at all. Because he thought Maharaj Pratap Rudra is a king and I will get contaminated if I associate with a king. But Maharaj Pratap Rudra, on the other hand, was a great devotee and he was eagerly looking forward to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to associate with him. But every time he would approach the devotees that, can I have darshan or audience of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would turn down that request. So we see Ramanand Rai using diplomacy over here to soften the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that he becomes receptive to Maharaj Pratap Rudra and he accepts him in his circle and he gives him his darshan and audience. So over here in this particular verse, which you know we are talking about, Ramanand Rai is actually telling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Maharaj Pratap Rudra, you know, he, so that I can come and serve you, which was your desire, I should leave my governor position and come and serve you. Maharaj Pratap Rudra immediately granted it. And he said, okay, I will continue paying you your full salary, but you go and serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as you want. So like that, Ramanand Rai, Prabhupada says, was using diplomacy. But the diplomacy was not to achieve some personal goal which Ramanand Rai had or some hidden motive. It was more to favor Maharaj Pratap Rudra. It was to help another devotee to progress in their bhakti. Again, Prabhupada also elaborates on the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. So he says that Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle, they were great, they were very, very wealthy people, they were zamindars. And once, you know, some government officials, there was some miscommunication or misunderstanding that happened, and some government officers actually were going to come and arrest them and put them in jail. But what does Raghunath Das Goswami do at that time? To protect his father and uncle, he actually hides them somewhere and then he goes and deals with these government officials. And he goes and deals in such a nice diplomatic way that he pacifies the whole situation, he clears up the misunderstanding and he's able to, they are not then wanting to arrest his father and his uncle. So we see Raghunath Das Goswami displaying this diplomatic behavior for saving his father and uncle. And same with Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami was also very diplomatic. When he was obviously a very trusted minister in the Mughal king's rule, and he wanted to then leave everything and go and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he gives up his ministership and he was thrown in jail, unfortunately, by the king. And in the jail, he talks to the guards very diplomatically. He convinces them and he bribes them to escape from the jail. Now we might say, oh, how can he be, you know, show such behavior? He's a Goswami. How can he display this behavior? But obviously it was for a higher purpose. And over there, Prabhupada says that diplomacy is absolutely acceptable in devotional life. It is in fact a form of devotional service, Prabhupada says. And we also see, therefore we see the Goswamis, when we read about, you know, we sing the Sat Goswami Astakam, it says, Dheera Dheera Jana Priya Priya Karo. So the Goswamis were very dear to the Dheeras, who are the saintly people, but at the same time they were also very dear to Adhira, the ruffians, because they knew how to deal. Especially Sanatan Goswami was very expert. It is said that in the villages, if you like, after Sanatan Goswami departed, everybody used to miss him so much. Even when he was alive, Sanatan Goswami would go around to different villages of Vrindavan and he would sit and have nice conversations with every family. He would sit on their, you know, they would have that mat, chattai or something we call outside, like a khatiya. He would sit there, he would have nice conversations, inquire about their well-being. How was your crop this year? What is your son doing? Did you get your daughter married nicely? Like, he would inquire into their family affairs and have such loving relationships with all these village people. So therefore, he was very dear to all of them. And they used to, whenever Sanatan Goswami would leave the village and go to another village, they would all come to see him off. He was so, like, they had so much love for Sanatan Goswami. So therefore he was called Dheera Dheera Jana Priyo. He was very dear to the devotees, but at the same time he was very dear to the ruffians as well, because he knew the art of dealing with the ruffians in a very diplomatic way. Now even in Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that the Lord himself promotes diplomacy, where it is conducive for advancement in spiritual life and it is conducive for advancement in devotional life. And we see the Lord doing this in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Over there, we see that, you know, when there has been the whole Bali Maharaj's pastime has happened and Bali Maharaj has defeated all the demigods, he has driven them out of their kingdom, he has conquered all the universes. And that then the churning of the milk ocean pastime happens. So, but before that, what do the demigods do? They actually go, because there was a war that happened and the demigods lost very badly. They had no means to get their kingdom back. So ultimately, like we said, the demigods are Kama Mishra Bhaktas and they always take shelter of the Supreme Lord Vishnu whenever they are in trouble, which is a great quality they have. So they go to take shelter of Vishnu and to seek a solution for the predicament that they had found themselves in. And at that time, Lord Vishnu tells them, he tells them that this is not a time for having a fight, for staging a war with these demons, because they are very powerful at the moment because of the blessings of their guru. So right now, do not stage a war. Instead of that, have very diplomatic conversation with them and make them to agree for a truce. Truce, or you know, like a peace, an armistice is called. Sign a peace agreement with them, go and have a conversation with them so that they will agree to come to the party, and then both of you together churn this milk ocean using the Mandara mountain. And this is exactly, it is described very nicely in the 8th canto, how the Lord, actually, you know, when in office somebody joins new, we give full training and coaching, like that Lord completely trained all these demigods on what exactly to go and speak to Bali Maharaj and all the other demoniac kings. And Indra, you know, all the demigods headed by Indra, they go. And exactly how the Lord had educated them, he speaks to Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj was also a very intelligent king. See, he had the power. He could still continue staging a war. But again, Bali Maharaj was also very intelligent. He was very proficient in the art of diplomacy. So at that time, he realizes the other demoniac kings wanted to attack Indra and all the demigods. But Bali Maharaj stops them and he says, no, they have come to negotiate something with us. Let us sit down and have a conversation and see what they have to offer. And then the whole churning, you know, of the milk ocean pastime happens, because the demigods and demons both needed to do it together. It was not demigods ke bas ki baat nahi thi, we say, no? It was not for the demigods alone to churn the whole milk ocean using the Mandara mountain. So therefore we see that the Lord himself has also promoted diplomacy, but these all examples we saw from the Chaitanya Charitamrita or from the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are all diplomacy or kutinati which has been promoted for, because it is conducive for devotional service. And such, you know, diplomacy is actually form of devotional service, Prabhupada says, which will help yourself progress in bhakti or help others progress in bhakti. However, on the contrary, when we see Diti's behavior over here, Diti's behavior over here does not fall under that definition which Prabhupada gives. It was neither conducive for her own devotional service, nor was it conducive for Kashyapa Muni's devotional service or for the son that she was asking. Because if that son she gets, who's always, his consciousness is going to be, how can I kill Indra? Then obviously it's not conducive for her son's devotional service. Already she produced two sons who were such demons. She hasn't learnt a lesson, and now she wants one more son who will have demoniac mentality to kill the head of the demigods. So this is exactly what we need to avoid when we are reading about Diti's behavior with Kashyapa Muni, and today the request she has made in today's verse. We see that she is displaying completely artificial behavior, and she is displaying dupliciousness in her behavior. She somehow, it says also, through her very charming gestures, she brought Kashyapa Muni's mind under her control. And after she has done that very smartly, she is now manipulating him to give her a benediction, which is not good for mankind. And this is what, you know, is from today's verse we learn, that this is the lesson for devotees, where we don't use this duplicious behavior. And this is what husband-wife should not do in with dealing with each other, but even in devotional circle, in our Vaishnava relationships, especially this anartha should be completely avoided. So that was on today's verse, and today is also the disappearance day of Saranga Thakur. So we will, for the next few minutes, we will talk about Sri Saranga Thakur and what were his achievements. So he was a very, very close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, he said he is one of the important branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree, and therefore his name and his pastimes have been mentioned in different, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, in many Chaitanya Mangal, in many different books about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Saranga Thakur's pastimes have been mentioned. So Saranga Thakur lived in Mamgachi. We all know about, when we read about Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, we see there is a place called Mamgachi in Modrumadvip. And that is where Saranga Thakur used to live. And he used to live under a tree, a bakul tree. And he used to worship beautiful deities of Radha Gopinath. And even today, if we go to Mamgachi, it's a rickshaw ride from Navadvip, from Mayapur. So if we go to Mamgachi today, even today below that bakul tree, there is a beautiful temple where the deities which Sri Saranga Thakur worshipped for more than 500 years ago are still there. Beautiful deities of Radha Gopinath and also Radha Madan Gopal. these deities are also there in that particular temple. And I was, you know, when I was reading about it on the internet, it showed the picture of an old Babaji, like an old person who has been serving those deities of Radha Gopinath and Radha Madan Gopal for the past 60 years, continuously. That is his service. And it is said that Babaji is more than 100 years old right now. And that expression on that Babaji's face was so serene, so peaceful, so devotional. Just that's the only service he's been doing for 60 years. One point of devotion to the deities of Radha Gopinath and Radha Madan Gopal. So these were personally worshipped by Saranga Thakur. Now how he would worship them, he would actually go and collect, with his own hands, he would go and collect fruits, flowers, vegetables, firewood to cook for the deities. Plus, he would then go and beg some rice, and he would spend his day singing nice songs for the Lord, stringing nice garlands for the Lord from the flowers he had collected, offering nice fruits to the Lord, and cooking nice bhoga. Like the rice and the vegetables that he brought, he would cook for the Lord, and then he would bathe his deities and offer worship and offer these bhoga to the deities. And after his deity worship was over, so he was, you know, we see, you know, how the train of bhakti runs on two tracks. One is the deity worship track, and one is the Pancharatrika Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi. So it runs on two tracks, and Saranga Thakur was a great example of this. After he did his deity worship so nicely, he would then take the boat, cross the Ganga, go on the other side of Navadvip, and he would participate in the Harinam pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is how he became a close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whether it was in Shriva Sangam or Harinam, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees would do around throughout the villages of Navadvip, Saranga Thakur was an integral part of that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would many times come to visit him in Mamgachi. So the bakul tree under which Saranga Thakur was living, once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he saw that the bakul tree was dying. Its wood had started rotting and the branches had dried out, leaves had not fallen off and all. So he told Saranga Thakur, he said that this tree is your shelter. You've been living under it for many years, but this tree is about to die. It's going completely, it has become dry. What are you going to do about it, Saranga Thakur? And Saranga Thakur told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, my Lord, only your mercy can revive this tree. Without your mercy, this tree has no hope at all. So you please bestow your merciful glance on this tree and you please revive it, my Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with his beautiful long golden arms, goes and embraces this bakul tree, because he wanted Saranga Thakur to have a nice shelter under that tree. So he goes and embraces this bakul tree. And as soon as he embraces the bakul tree, it starts becoming green again. The branches start sprouting leaves. We can see flowers growing and it becomes lush and green. So the whole tree gets revived by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's touch. So Saranga Thakur had also taken a vow. He had said that, I will never ever accept any disciple in my life. That is the vow he had taken. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was continuously goading him. He was telling him that you should accept disciples, you should accept disciples. You are such a nice devotee, there will be other souls which will benefit if you become their guru. So you should accept disciples. So continuously, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept telling him this, Saranga Thakur decided. He said that, tomorrow morning, the first person I meet, I'm going to initiate that person. Because you are ordering, my Lord, I have to fulfill your order, and it will be done tomorrow morning. And the next day morning, Saranga Thakur goes to take bath in the Ganga. And while he's taking bath, the dead body of a child floats and comes and touches him. It hits him. Now this dead child was actually a child who died an untimely death, obviously, because he's a child, by a snake bite during his Brahmin initiation, when he was getting punal, you know, the Brahmin thread. So during his Upanayanam ceremony, this boy died because a snake came and bit him. And as was the custom during those days, because he was a child, he was not cremated by his parents, but his body was put on banana tree trunks and wrapped in banana leaves, and it was floated down the Ganga River. That is how they would get, you know, dispose of the body of a dead child. And this child came and hit Saranga Thakur when he was in the Ganga, and immediately Saranga Thakur caught him, because he had vowed, the first person I see, I will initiate. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was watching this from a distance. And Saranga Thakur tells this dead body, I am going to make you my disciple. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually
tells Saranga Thakur, he actually encourages him. Saranga Thakur, you say the mantra in his ear. And Saranga Thakur immediately speaks the mantra into the boy's ear and initiates that dead child. And as soon as he hears this mantra from the mouth of the pure devotee, the dead child revives and he comes back to life. And this is how Saranga Thakur, so that boy's name was Murari. And that is how Saranga Thakur's name after this came to be known as Saranga Murari Thakur. So he initiates the child. The child comes back to life, and obviously the parents are informed that your dead child has come back to life, and they actually come to take the child away, to back to their home, but the child refuses. He says, no, I have been given my, you know, a new birth by my guru. I'm going to now just stay here and dedicate my whole life to the service of my guru. So he, you know, for his whole life, this young child Murari, he then served Saranga Murari Thakur very nicely. Now it is also said that Saranga Thakur was always like, you know, absorbed. He would lose external consciousness. He would not be in external consciousness. He would go into his sadhana, his bhajan, into his remembrance or smaranam of the Lord. And because of that, many times he would go underwater. And he would stay for 2-3 days completely lost in meditation on the Lord's pastimes. And he would not suffer any bodily discomfort. Even though he was underwater, he was able to breathe, he was able to survive, he was not drowning, neither was he like, you know, feeling the lack of oxygen or anything like that. So he would go like this underwater and he would completely be absorbed in meditation of the Lord. He would when he would pass through forests and jungles, because that time obviously everybody used to travel on foot, he would actually see tigers and he would sit on their backs and he would encourage them to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Same with pythons, dangerous snakes. He would take the python and on his lap he would play with the python. And he would be constantly singing and immersed in the Lord's pastimes. So this is how Saranga Thakur was completely immersed and absorbed. He was such a pure devotee of the Lord that he did not have any external consciousness, no awareness I'm dealing with a ferocious tiger or a poisonous snake, no awareness of that at all. But instead he would make them also chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So in the Gaur Ganesh Des Deepika, which has been written by Kavi Karnapur, who is the son of Shivanand Sen, he actually has been said that he is Nandi Mukhi Sakhi. So in Vrajalila, he is Nandi Mukhi Sakhi. In fact, there is a very beautiful verse which Kavi Karnapur has written. He has said, Vraje Nandi Mukhi Yasit Sadhya Saranga Thakura Prahalada Manyate Kaishchin Mat Pitra Na Sa Manyate. So it said that many people, Kavi Karnapur is writing, many people think that Saranga Thakur was actually an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj, but Mat Pita Na Sa Manyate, my father did not agree with that. But so Shivanand Sen did not agree with that particular statement that he was an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. In fact, my father said that he was Vraje Nandi Mukhi Yasit Sadhya Saranga Thakura. He was an incarnation of Nandi Mukhi Sakhi from Vrajalila. That is what is Saranga Thakur's eternal position. And you know, because he was such an elevated devotee, he was, you know, an incarnation of Sakhi herself. He was a very, very pure devotee, completely on the transcendental platform. And sometimes because he was behave like this with tigers and snakes and all that, or go underwater, his behavior was very inconceivable and ununderstandable by other people around him. They could not perceive or they could not understand Saranga Thakur's behavior at all. And his disappearance, which we are celebrating today, was on the 13th day of the dark fortnight of Mrigashir Samant, which comes in November, December. So that is a little bit about Sri Saranga Thakur's life. And we'll end the class here and we'll see if there are any questions, comments or corrections. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Saranga Thakur ki. Yes.
Thank you, Mataji, for the nice class. Sometimes we see we don't get along with a few devotees, but then in lectures we hear that whenever we see them, we should like say Hari Bola, Hare Krishna, and talk with them nicely. But then from inside, we don't feel like nice about them. So isn't that duplicitous behavior that we should try to avoid? So what can we do in that case?
Sivya, you always ask very nice questions. I look forward to your questions whenever I give class. So the question is that what should we do when we don't get along with devotees? But obviously the scriptures also say we should at least greet them and say Hari Bol, and also is that duplicitous behavior? That's your question, isn't it? So what, in fact, Jiva Goswami says in some of the scriptures and books that he has written is that to not smile upon seeing a Vaishnava is actually Vaishnava Prada. There are many other forms of Vaishnava Prada he talks, but one of the highest form of Vaishnava Prada is to kill a devotee. But he says the first thing is also to do not smile when we look at a devotee. So obviously, you know, there is this duplicitous behavior which we elaborated, saying that we should, duplicitous behavior or diplomatic behavior or kutinati is when we are actually trying to achieve some ulterior motive, some hidden agenda. Only then it is called diplomatic behavior or kutinati. But when we are actually trying to maintain good relationships with other Vaishnavas and trying to avoid that Vaishnava Aparadha, which Jiva Goswami has said that to not even feel pleasure or happiness when we look at a devotee and to smile, not to smile at them, is actually a Vaishnava Aparadha. So we are trying to guard, because like I said, Prabhupada has said that diplomacy which is done to progress in spiritual life is actually a form of devotional service. So by not smiling, like, you know, being straightforward, I don't like you, for example, with that devotee whom we don't like or we don't get along with, by being straightforward with that devotee, neither is it going to help that devotee. It's not going to help him progress, because obviously he will feel bad. At the same time, it is not going to help us progress, because Jiva Goswami has said it's a Vaishnava Aparadha not to smile at a devotee. So to safeguard our own devotional service, if we are smiling at a devotee, it is not considered duplicitous behavior. In fact, you know, here we can adopt maybe the straightforwardness or that transparency which Prabhupada says which should be there, open, honest dealings with devotees. Maybe we can go and talk to them about something that we are not liking or something which has offended us. And that is what is dadati prati granati guhya makhyati prachati. We reveal our mind and confidence to them and we find out that is there anything which I have done because of which you are behaving like this, or maybe this thing about your behavior was little bit hurting to my heart, so I thought I'll come and discuss with you rather than allow it to breed. And then it shows in our external behavior, in our words or in our actions. So that, in fact, that is where we can avoid the, you know, honest, open dealings which Prabhupada says devotees should have with each other. But if we are, you know, it might happen in spiritual life that we don't get along with everybody. And that is the truth of spiritual life. Some devotees might be in our inner circle whom we trust a lot. And some devotees, we might have just cordial relationship, but we might not have really trusting or deep relationship with that person. And some devotees might be whom we don't get along with. And that might be a reality, because everybody has material conditioning. We all have our natures. So we might not get along with some devotees, and that might be the truth of life in spiritual life. But we at least, you know, not offend that devotee so that we don't fall down because of that Vaishnava Aparadha, and therefore we at least smile and we just maintain like externally cordial behavior with that devotee. So that is how I would see you. But highest is to go and then, you know, talk to the devotee and try to clear up the misunderstanding so that we don't have to then, you know, even just smile at them when we see them. It comes naturally from the heart rather than just artificially doing it so that we don't do Vaishnava Aparadha. Does that answer? Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hari Purusham Ramaham Bhajami Govindam Hari Purusham
Shri Gurum Vaishnava Sahaprajatam Sahagana Raghunathantam Vam Sajivam Sahaptaitam Sahavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Sri Vishakhanitam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Jaya Jaya Radha Ramana Hari Govind.
Jaya 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 J